There'll be competition tonight.
Yeah, there will be a little competition. It's a little bit closer.
Okay. It's a lot easier when the kirtan's going on.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 I'm going to read from a section that I personally have been reading from recently, from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. And there's some very brilliant and illuminating commentaries which Srila Prabhupada gleaned his from in order to produce Krishna book and his 10th canto commentaries as well. We've been speaking in the last two classes I've given here. For those who are here, we've been talking a lot about devotional service in terms of serving a person, which is obviously it's the essence of devotion. Devotion, Prabhupada oftentimes says, is for the impersonalist, how can there be devotion? Because it's very difficult to be devoted to an inanimate object, an impersonal void. What is the quality or characteristic of devotion to an entity that has no life, has no desires, has no personality? So Srila Prabhupada uses the word devotional service, and in order to enhance the real meaning of service, there's no question of service to God without devotion. And that's how he translates bhakti, devotional service. So we've been speaking a lot about the service to a person. We're speaking about how the ideal devotees who serve Krishna and please Krishna to the highest degree gratify Krishna's transcendental senses, gratify all of his desires. He's the supreme enjoyer, so certainly to satisfy his desires is a way that he himself relishes rasa, or relationships. And by relishing that rasa, or relationships with others, those who give pleasure to Krishna, as we've been speaking about, without any expectation of getting pleasure in return, it just so happens that one of the byproducts of devotion is bliss. It's even if one doesn't want it. Of course, this is very difficult to conceive, especially by nature. Every living being is anandamaya bhyasat, which means that we're meant to experience bliss. We want it. Unfortunately, we spent a lot of time looking for it in the wrong place, and therefore, we've never tasted it. Or, if we have tasted it, we may have gotten a slight glimpse by the mercy of Krishna or his devotee as to what is possibly what can possibly be experienced at some point in a more elevated stage of devotion. But it just so happens that pleasure, unlimited pleasure, is a byproduct of devotion to Krishna, which really enhances our understanding of his being a personality, because he is the reservoir of bliss, the reservoir of all pleasure. Prabhupada would oftentimes, in speaking about that verse, that just as all the purposes of a small pond can be at once be served by great reservoirs of water, similarly all the purpose of the Vedas can be served by one who knows the purpose behind them. I was listening, you'll hear me quoting a lot from these 1968 lectures because I've been doing my exercises every day. And I'm listening to, particularly relishing Prabhupada's 1968 lectures in Los Angeles, where he was speaking to a rather neophyte audience, and I was marveling at some of the questions that Srila Prabhupada was entertaining from his audience, or sometimes not entertaining, sometimes just dismissing it. What is the purpose of such questions? Ask something relevant to what I've talked about. Prabhupada said that many times in these 68 lectures. But Prabhupada, just recently, Prabhupada was quoting that verse, all the purposes of a small pond can be served by great reservoirs of water. And Prabhupada started just talking about village life in India. And he started to explain that how in the village life, the village girls, they go and they go to one place, at one particular place for washing clothes, another place for washing dishes, another place for bathing, and how they have all these different places to go. He was talking about small wells where they go to fulfill their purposes. And then Prabhupada said, but if you have one big reservoir of water, Prabhupada was speaking about, I guess, the river. Yeah, he was using the example. I remember he was using the example of the river because he was saying that the river is always continuously flowing and therefore cannot become contaminated. Of course, Prabhupada had not... Well, he did witness the Hudson, I think, at that time. But still, Prabhupada was saying, big reservoirs of water, you can fulfill all your purpose. You can go to one place and fulfill your purposes in one place. So, Prabhupada was using this analogy about reservoir. And in the same way, Krishna is a reservoir of all pleasure. And if anybody wants to experience real pleasure, real happiness, then why not go to the reservoir? And that's Krishna, who is the Rasa Raj. He is the king of all rasas and of all relationships, and he is bestower of pleasure upon those who satisfy him. He gives himself, and he gives unlimited bliss, and he brings that living being onto the protection of his internal potency, the Daivam Prakritim, the internal potency of the Lord, which is the Sandini potency, the Samvit potency, and the Hladini potency, which gives the living being his access to eternality, full cognizance, full knowledge of his relationship with Krishna, and unlimited bliss. And the embodiment of that Hladini potency, as we know, is Srimati Radharani, because she gives Krishna the greatest pleasure, and she experiences a pleasure by giving Krishna the greatest pleasure. She experiences a pleasure which is even greater than Krishna's pleasure, and therefore Krishna has to come as Lord Chaitanya in order to taste the pleasure that Radharani experiences. It's because that's one thing Krishna didn't know, even though Krishna is the experience of all pleasures. He didn't know what Radharani was tasting, how much bliss she was experiencing. So that's Krishna's personality, and when we speak about Krishna's personality, we speak about what are his qualities, what are his characteristics. What makes him the person that he is? Prabhupada would many times give the example that I told you. There is something wrong. I told you this. There's three times I've been here now, and every time. Will you please accept my words now? I know you're very frugal. You don't want to spend Krishna's Lakshmi. But it's proven now. Three times, three strikes, you're out. Absolutely. The last Harinama was here with Janananda Maharaj. The thing went dead.
Yeah.
The New Year's Day Harinama, the thing went dead. And tonight, it's not freezing cold in here. You can't use that excuse.
No,
you're right. Time to replace it. Or repair it, one or the other.
It's very old.
It's quite old, yeah.
But
I don't know.
Anyways. Kishori knows, and Sharanagati knows also, that the first words that I learned in the Soviet Union were Nirabhotayat. It means it doesn't work. Two phrases I learned, Nirubhotiyat and Nipalochilas. Nipalochilas means it didn't happen. I'll share those two confidential phrases with those who are not familiar with the Russian language. But there's a reason why I learned those two phrases first thing. Now you're part of that experience. So what were we saying just before?
Krishna's personality.
There was something specific I was just about to say. I mean, there's a lot more I'm still going to say, but there was something specific that I was speaking about.
And the potencies?
Huh?
And the potencies of Krishna.
No, I already talked about the potencies. This is Samvit, Sandini, and Ladini Shakti. And his pleasure. I was going to use an example, something from Prabhupada had said, but it's gone.
Matik smati gyanam apohanam cha. Huh? He was speaking about the class and the Prabhupada was giving and the people were asking questions and Prabhupada was saying that it's not an important question.
Yeah, I passed that also. Actually, I'm just testing to see if anybody's listening. We're speaking about, I guess we'll just go back to the essential point about Krishna's personality. And especially in how he deals with his devotees. Now I remember. I was going to quote Prabhupada. Prabhupada often says, to know someone is to know you is to love you. Mm-hmm. He was quoting that, and he said, if one wants to love somebody, then to the degree that we know them, we can love them. And so Prabhupada, of course, would say that Krishna can never be fully known. But the more we know about Krishna, the more it will increase our love or affection for the Lord. And ultimately, that's what we're trying to revive, is that our dormant love for Krishna. I mean, that's the essence of all our activities in devotional service, a phrase that we use very liberally sometimes. Oh, this is my devotional service. We perform this devotional service. Can I have some devotional service? We use this phrase very liberally, but the devotional service means that there must be some affection and there must be absorption. And Rupa Goswami has given the characteristics of devotional service that the intent is to please Krishna. That is the intent. That is the primary, that is the Sarup Lakshana, the primary characteristic of bhakti, is Sarup Lakshana and Tatashta Lakshana. And the primary characteristic of bhakti is done with the intent to please Krishna. And the secondary is, of course, is that it's freed from any motivation, freed from the desire for fruit of gain and or the desire for liberation. But devotional service means that the primary aim and desire is with the intention to please Krishna. And when such devotion, of course, is awakened within the heart, we understand that that is Krishna's mercy, because he doesn't give devotion so easily. We oftentimes quote that verse from the Bhagavatam where Krishna is speaking to Yudhisthira Maharaj, and he says that not only is Krishna your guru, your god, and head of your family, but I can see that you're very fortunate, because I see that, and he was speaking how Krishna became the order carrier for Yudhisthira Maharaj, and he became the servant of Yudhisthira Maharaj, and that therefore, he says, I can see you're very fortunate because Krishna has given you bhakti, or devotion, and Krishna doesn't give bhakti so easily. He'll give liberation much more easily than he'll give bhakti. He'll give liberation very easily in comparison to bhakti, because when he gives somebody bhakti, he has to give himself. So it's not a question of just bestowing bhakti, but also when Krishna gives somebody real devotion, real love, then what does he do? What is the symptom that one actually has love for God? And one of the characteristics of bhakti as given by Rupa Goswami is it's the only means to control Krishna. Yeah, that is the characteristic of pure love, of prema bhakti. Krishna allows himself to come under the control of those who have love for him. And he becomes a plaything. Prabhupada says he becomes a plaything in the hand of his devotee. No. None of us would like to become playthings in the hands of anyone. Obviously, we're very protective of becoming a plaything in anyone's hands. We don't want to sacrifice our individuality. We don't want to sacrifice our personal interests, our selfish interests. We don't want to lose opportunities or benefits that may come in the future. But Krishna, although he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he likes to make himself a plaything in the hand of his devotee, and the devotee can control him and make him dance. And that's how actually Radharani, the gopis, they actually control Krishna by their love and makes Krishna dance. Although Krishna has called the gopis to appear in the middle of the forest with the transcendental sound of his flute, and the gopis heard the sound. When they gave up everything, we've been using that example in class this morning, and how the gopis they performed the greatest sacrifice. They discarded and went against Vedic injunctions. They went against social criticism. Imagine the kind of criticism there would be for leaving their families, leaving their husbands, and going off into the forest in the dead of the night to answer the call of a charming blue boy and who's, you know, captured their hearts. And they faced all kinds of social ostracism and took that risk. But it wasn't because they were driven by, although Prabhupada uses the word lust in relationship to the lusty desires of the gopis, it's not lust as we know it. You know, the love that the gopis have is called kamanuga, which is there's sambandha rupa and kamarupa, which means lusty desires. But their lusty desires were that they wanted to satisfy Krishna's desires. And never for a moment was there even the slightest tinge in their hearts of thinking that I want to enjoy. They're thinking, I want Krishna to enjoy. Whenever the gopis, Prabhupada explains in Chaitanya Charitamrita, whenever the gopis are decorating their bodies, putting on clothing, putting on ornaments, whatever way, the only thing they're thinking of is how Krishna will be pleased. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, Krishna, people who do not understand anything about the nature of rasa or loving relationships on the transcendental platform, people think that Krishna was immoral because they don't understand that actually there's no question of immorality for Krishna. Everyone is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. I remember one time, one man was speaking to Srila Prabhupada, and he was criticizing Krishna, saying how Krishna was enjoying Krishna had so many wives. That's what it was. Say, why does Krishna have to have so many wives? And because, as we know, Krishna married over 16,000 wives to satisfy their desires, you know, because they all wanted Krishna as their husband. So Krishna reciprocated according to their desire, became their husband and married them. But this man was criticizing. So Prabhupada said, how many wives do you have? And the man said, I have one. He says, you've stolen one from Krishna. You are immoral. And then Prabhupada went on to explain that everyone is meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. You are a thief. You are immoral. So, Prabhupada was so expert in dealing with everyone's attitude. But there's no question of Krishna's immorality in his ways that he reciprocates love with his devotees. There's no question. You know, it's Krishna is simply, this is how Krishna enjoys, and there is no tinge of any kind of mundane lust. He's meant to be the supreme reservoir of all pleasure. If he is the supreme reservoir of all pleasure, and all living beings are meant to enjoy, to experience that pleasure, then this pleasure that Krishna experiences with his devotees is completely spiritual, because he's never interested in anything mundane or material. He never takes interest in these things. Only something which is completely spiritual can give Krishna pleasure. Why would he be possibly interested in anything? He's not interested in anything of the mundane world. But we project, according to our own mundane conceptions, we project our lusty desires, our material desires for pleasure and enjoyment, projected on Krishna, and think that, oh, Krishna. Therefore, the materialists, they don't understand the affairs of Krishna with the gopis. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada was always, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was always very emphatic that one should not delve too deeply into the affairs of the loving affairs of Krishna and the gopis, because mundane people will not understand. And unless one is actually freed from this mundane desire, he'll also, as soon as Prabhupada even, I remember one lecture, it was an early lecture, I can't remember what year it was, I think it was 1966. Prabhupada says, if one hears of Krishna's pastime with the gopis and he thinks of mundane sex, he says, then stop it. Stop it immediately. Do not. Do not enter there. Do not hear. And stop it meaning stop hearing. Because one has to be purified, obviously. So we don't... I may be speaking tonight from a particular section of the Bhagavatam, which is actually Krishna's Rasa Lila, but I'm not going to delve so deeply as to really enter into these descriptions and narrations of Krishna's pleasure with the gopis. In fact, this particular section that I'm reading from in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it really helps us to understand how Krishna is a reciprocator with all of his devotees, including the sadhakas, including the devotees in the material world, who are still in the material world, who are still bound by the material body, and how Krishna reciprocates with everyone according to the degree of their love for him. And it helps us to understand a little bit about his personality, about emotions, that experiences that we have, emotions that we have in this body, in relationship to family, to friends, to lovers, and how Krishna's love and Krishna's family, Krishna's friends, Krishna's lovers, the love that they experience are all the original form of spiritual emotions, and the emotions that we experience in this world are simply perverted reflections of the emotions that are meant to be experienced in relationship to Krishna. So I'm going to read, and I'm definitely not going to complete, I'm not going to finish. In fact, I've even already spoken more as an introduction than I expected to speak as an introduction. Wanted to introduce the topic. And I'm going to read a little bit from these verses and comment. We'll just speak a little bit. Maybe I'll even continue tomorrow on the topic if I can present it in such a way that it's adaptable for a Sunday feast program. But is it interesting? Just checking.
It should be.
We're persons too. We're persons. Krishna is a person. And therefore, it really helps when Srila Prabhupada uses the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Makes it very clear. You know, nobody translates Bhagavan in the way Prabhupada did. It's the Supreme Personality of Godhead to emphasize that God, obviously, that God is a person, because the tendency, you know, is impersonalism. Yeah. Actually, that was the verse this morning we were reading from the Bhagavatam. We were reading from the verse where it's recommended for those who have not yet been able to conceive of the personal conception of God to meditate on the Virat Rupa form of the Lord. Of course, essence of the class that I was speaking about is that the Bhagavatam, every page of the Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to glorify devotional service. So, therefore, there is no impersonalism or no concessions for impersonalism in Srimad Bhagavatam. So, although it may appear that the verse was saying, yes, you can meditate on the impersonal Virat Rupa form of the Lord, essentially, Bhagavatam, the verse taken in the full context of the Bhagavatam is meant to glorify devotional service to Krishna, which means person. And because Krishna is a person, and because I'm a person, and because every living being eternally is a person, nātve vāhaṁ tātu nāmam nātve me janādipā acāyavana bhavishyama sāvaveyama takpuram Krishna. I mean, Prabhupada would oftentimes quote this verse, never was there a time when I did not exist. Never was there a time when you, Arjuna, did not exist. Never was a time when all the kings present on the battlefield did not exist, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. And Prabhupada explains, when quoting this verse, he says, this is Krishna's emphasis to help us to understand that we're eternally persons. Because if at some perfectional stage we became, lost our personality, or if previously we were impersonal and then became persons by accepting material body, then Krishna would have said, never was in a time when I did not exist, or in the future will I cease to be. Why did Krishna bother to emphasize Arjuna and all the other kings' presence, their individuality? He did it for purpose. To emphasize that point, that Arjuna, never did you not exist. And in the future, we will ever cease to be. Nor also all these kings, never did they not exist. Nor ever. So we're persons, and because we're persons, we have desires, and we should know how to fulfill those desires. All we say that Krishna can fulfill all of one's desires. All whatever desire is there within the core of the heart can be fulfilled much better by Krishna than we can by our own efforts to fulfill them.
Right.
Of course, for this devotee, Krishna will fulfill the desires of his devotee in such a way that the devotees won't come back and ask for it again, if the devotee wants the fulfillment of some material desire. So Krishna is very expert. He knows how to satisfy the desires of the devotee in such a way that ultimately the devotee gets the most valuable jewel. He said, why should I give my devotee material prosperity? Instead, I shall induce him to take shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget these things. So Krishna knows how to satisfy the desires of his devotees. Of course, as super soul, as the Lord within the heart, the Lord will, is the witness and give sanction. He is neutral. Neutral, seated within the heart as though neutral. And Prabhupada gives the example just like this, the judge in the court, he's neutral. Yeah. This one person is being punished, another one is being rewarded, but in all his, whether he's awarding or punishment, he's neutral. He's just giving according to the particular, to the degree that the person has committed some wrongdoing or some positive activity. But the judge is neutral. So the same way the super soul is neutral. And Prabhupada, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, samaham sabhabhuteshu nami dvesho asti na priyaha. When Krishna says, I'm not envious of anyone, I'm equal to everyone. Whoever renders devotional service to me as a friend is in me, and I am a friend to them. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the first half of this verse is Krishna as super soul. I'm equal to everyone. Not envious of anyone. But Krishna also says, whoever is a friend to me, I'm a friend. How can I be equal to everyone but still be friends with somebody? If I'm friends with somebody, that means some I'm not friends with. Right? That's our conception. That means I'm playing favorites. Right? He's my friend. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur talks about that here in this commentary. Very brilliantly. So brilliantly. I'm just sorry to keep you waiting. Trying to develop some eagerness in you to hear. I can't say anything which is nectar. And the acharyas give us the nectar, but I'm trying to develop the eagerness to hear from the acharyas. You know, try to build up the anticipation of what we're going to hear from the acharyas. But so Krishna, he says, I'm a friend. Whoever's a friend to me, I'm a friend to them. So that's Krishna. If you want to be my friend, I'll be your friend. You know? But Krishna doesn't have to worry about playing favorites. He's just simply reciprocating according to the devotional attitude. And Prabhupada gives the example. It's natural. It's very natural to reciprocate with those who are fully dependent. It's natural. Prabhupada gives the example just like if a parent hears children screaming in danger. If he hears this voice of his child, immediately the parent is... Here's that voice above all other voices. Because that child doesn't know anyone except the parent. So, therefore, it's natural. So when the devotee is so fully dependent on Krishna, and says, Krishna, I just want to depend upon you fully. I just want to be friends with you. So Krishna naturally reciprocates. So that is Krishna, the personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, the supreme personality of Godhead, Swayam Bhagavan, who reciprocates with those who have spontaneous affection and towards Krishna as a friend, as a parent, as a lover. And Krishna reciprocates and dances according to their desires and becomes completely subordinate to their however they want to please, to satisfy his senses. So, the gopis are sitting in the forest at this particular point, and Krishna already called. Krishna played his flute. Gopis, they all left, appeared in the forest. Krishna said, why have you come? Don't you know it's dangerous to come in the forest in the middle of the night? Why don't you go back home? And the gopis were just standing there making marks in the sand with their toes. They couldn't ambala, they couldn't move. Although Krishna was telling them to go home, they couldn't go. Why have you done this? Why are you speaking to us in this way? And then as we know, Krishna, he enjoyed with the gopis, and then at one point, Krishna left all the gopis. And the gopis became so mad, in ecstasy, asking the trees, asking the creepers, asking the flowers, the deers, all creatures in the forest. They began imitating Krishna's activities, pastimes. And then there's the songs of the gopis, and the gopis feeling great pangs of separation. Where did Krishna go? And they began looking. Maybe Krishna went off with somebody else, and then they saw a set of footsteps someplace. They saw two set of footprints. Oh, look, Krishna must have left, went off. And then gradually they saw one set of footprints, and then they found Srimati Radharani was there. She also had, Krishna had left her. And they were thrown into an ocean of lamentation, bereavement, and suffering. Gopis felt that Krishna was killing them. And then when Krishna returned, they wanted to find out, how is it possible that Krishna could do something like that to someone who loves him so much? Why would he leave us? And therefore they asked questions about Krishna to Krishna in the form of riddles, trying to understand, what kind of reciprocator are you anyways? What kind of a personality are you? They wanted to hear it directly from Krishna's mouth, what kind of a person he was. So they asked this question. Some people reciprocate the affection only of those who are affectionate toward them, while others show affection even to those who are indifferent or inimical. And yet others will not show affection toward anyone. Dear Krishna, please properly explain this matter to us. You want to know what kind of a reciprocator are you, Krishna? Why? What kind of a lover are you? why would you... But they didn't want to accuse him directly. So they wanted him... They asked in such a way to make Krishna responsible for his actions and have him explain it himself. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains each of the gopis personally considered within her mind, since Krishna has put us, who are the crest jewel of all his loving devotees, into such an unfortunate condition, we should ask him why he did it. Now, other gopis thought, O Krishna, do you have love for us, indifference to us, or enmity towards us? Three things. Is it love? Indifference? What are the symptoms of all these things? And they're going, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is going to go on to explain what are the symptoms of love, indifference, and, or enmity. Because these are all ways of reciprocating with somebody. You know, are you our enemy? Because you tortured us. Or did you love us? Because you called us and to come and enjoy, you know. But what? We're trying to understand what is the exact nature. So they're going to go through each one of these. And they say, okay, if it's love, there's two types of love. Anybody know what they are? In reference to this, yes.
One is conjugal love.
Well, yes, that's true. But in reference to what the gopis are asking about, it's conditional love and unconditional love. So said that they wanted to know first, is Krishna a conditional lover? What's a conditional? A conditional lover is not a lover at all, first of all. It's a merchant. But so they're asking, even though there are these three possibilities, we cannot ascertain which is the fact. Moreover, is your love conditional or unconditional? And then they're going to say, it cannot be conditional. And this is why. Cannot be conditional love. Gopis are saying this to Krishna. Because the person with conditional love gratifies those who help him fulfill his desires. And therefore, does not neglect them or subject them to misery. You, however, have tried to kill us by burning us in the fire of separation from you. So, a conditional lover is always thinking about, well, I'm getting something from this person. I certainly don't want to do anything to this person to cause them to be angry with me, to hate me, or to stop serving me. So I'm going to be good to this person so that I don't lose what I'm getting from this person. That's a conditional lover. And therefore, the gopis are saying, you can't be a conditional lover, because otherwise, why did you try to kill us? So in this we see that you're not a conditional lover. But they're also going to explain, but however, we see you're not an unconditional lover either. And they're going to go on to explain, neither is your love unconditional, since you abandon us in the dense, fearful forest in the middle of the night, though seeing our suffering, you are not at all bereaved. In that, we see some motive. So it cannot be unconditional. So the gopis are saying, you saw how much suffering. Yeah, but you weren't at all bereaving. You weren't at all disturbed by it. You must have wanted to do something. Otherwise, you would have been disturbed when you saw our suffering. But you weren't. So, in this we see there must have been some motive. You must have been trying to get back at us for something. So, if you have love for us, it's not unconditional love, either. So, they're going through each one and saying, neither are you indifferent. Why? Are you not indifferent? An indifferent person whose indifference is...
doesn't bother. I don't care.
Doesn't care. Makes no effort to... Yeah. It's your problem. But we can see that you're not indifferent because you try to both make us happy and sad.
Yeah.
So how could you be indifferent? So you're not indifferent either. And neither was there enmity. And we see, and when they speak of enmity, he speaks about two types of enmity. And he said enmity is a permanent dislike towards somebody. That's enmity. Or enmity which is aroused by some contrary action by the other person. Right? So either there's a permanent dislike, or... So therefore they say, actually, we don't see that it's enmity due to some permanent dislike, we just don't see that quality in you. We haven't seen that. And it couldn't have been done anything that we provoked, because we've never done anything to cause you disturbance. So, therefore... You're not an unconditional lover, you're not a conditional lover, you're not indifferent, you don't have any permanent dislike towards us, nor is it anything that was provoked. So therefore they're asking this question in the form of riddles, because they want to hear Krishna wriggle out of this one. How is he? You know.
So what he is.
Yeah, what is he? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur goes on to explain. He says, rather... The gopis are speaking, rather you serve as the example of a person who has that sort of perverted enmity symptomized by the vicious desire to harm those who trust one. But we won't say this out loud. We implicitly trust you, but somehow there must be within you some kind of perverted enmity symptomized by a vicious desire to harm those who trust you. But we're not going to say that.
No.
Are you relating to these statements?
I tell you, having a young child, you can think of how vicious that is.
That's what I said. When we're speaking about these types of emotions that the gopis are experiencing, it's like, yeah, they're based upon the emotions that we experience in relationships in this world. Because these are the perverted reflections of the emotions the gopis, the residents of Vrindavan are experiencing in relationship with Krishna. But they never... The symptom of their love is never diminished, even though there's reason for it to diminish. But it's never diminished. That's one of the symptoms given by Rupa Goswami as the criteria of loving relationships between Krishna and the Gopa. Although there's reason for a diminution of their love, it's never. It's always just the other way. But here, in the perverted form, in the perverted reflection, they oftentimes become causes for... And then when you begin questioning the motive, you wonder what is really in this relationship. Of course, it's very interesting also, because Krishna is going to use as an example of one type of unconditional love is the mother and father to the child. He's going to use that as an example in his answer to the gopis. I don't know if we'll get there. It's a little bit later. But he uses that as one of the auspicious types of unconditional love. And he says, of course, more auspicious than the parent of the child is the saintly person who's... Even though a person may act contrary in a contrary way towards him, he's always merciful. He's always merciful. But Krishna uses these two examples of unconditional lovers. So, anyways, the gopis have said, we're not going to state this openly, but this is how it appears. So we will ask such questions in the form of riddles, so that Krishna himself will give the appropriate answer, and thus the truth of this matter will become evident. So, the next paragraph, I'll read them quickly, we'll go through it. Because the gopis were feeling the same sentiment within each of their hearts, they all reflected in a similar way. Then these gopis of similar mind spoke, O most intelligent one, O Krishna, please answer this riddle of ours. There are some people who only respect those who respect them. Their respect is conditional. They give respect expecting something, and if they do not get that, then they no longer give respect. This is conditional love. Quite to the contrary of this, there are those who give respect to those who do not respect them. They have unconditional respect. Not expecting any results for themselves, they have unconditional love. The third type of people are those who do not respect anyone, whether that person respects them or not. There is no question of conditional or unconditional love here. Those persons are indifferent. Hatred and enmity are also non-reciprocation. So persons who are hateful and inimical also fall in the category of non-respect. Though not clearly mentioned here, it will become somewhat evident in Krishna's answers. The gopis said, Krishna, please say something to explain this matter to us, this matter as to who reciprocates with whom and who fails to do so. You should answer correctly without deviating from the subject. So this is, again, sort of like a summary of all of these different types of reciprocators, I think is the best word to use. The unconditional, conditional lover, the indifferent person, doesn't reciprocate, but still that's a form of reciprocating. Of course, Krishna's going to go on to explain also that why it appeared that he didn't reciprocate, but that was his reciprocation.
I see.
And this, of course, this is what really brings out, what really enhances Krishna's personality. You know, especially, you know, for the devotee, but Krishna's going to, it appears externally, invisibly, that Krishna is invisible, he's not reciprocating. But what is Krishna doing by not reciprocating? He's actually reciprocating because he's intensifying the affection the devotees have for him. For those who have unconditional love, Krishna's intensifying their love. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I'm jumping ahead a little bit so that I can, because I know I'm not going to have time to read all these commentaries. But I'm jumping ahead a little bit to explain a little bit about Krishna's personality. Is that for those who actually are situated on the platform of prema, pure love, Krishna gives the example, I do not reciprocate with them because I want to intensify their attachment and love and affection for me. Just like a person who once had great wealth and lost it can do nothing except, after he loses it, except to think of how to get that wealth back again. Right? He uses a mundane example. Right. Like a person that has some wealth and then he loses everything. I mean, after having it and losing it, his mind is always thinking. Mm-hmm. Right? Yes. I'm sure there are many people in 2008 who went through that. Many investors.
People lost this time also.
Right? They were just looking at how much their stocks were worth. Yes. I remember I had a disciple in the Soviet Union, one of my first disciples. He became a devotee, and he was always keeping in the back of his mind that actually, I have so much money in the bank that I don't have to be in anxiety. I just leave it there, and. During the Soviet Union, he had a lot of money in the bank. So then when communism fell and the rubles, actually they even froze all the banks and they wouldn't even give any money out because they didn't know what it was worth. And then all that money that he had in the bank that he was thinking he could live for a long time, it became worthless. Worthless. Like nothing. Literally nothing. It reminds me of a cartoon that I saw in I think it was a Newsweek magazine. It was during these particular times when it followed the Soviet Union. It showed one old babushka and dedushka, grandmother, grandfather. the old grandfather was eating some, looked like soup or borscht or something like that. And he was saying to his wife, "You spent our hard-earned rubles for this slop?" And the wife said to the husband, "Those are our hard-earned rubles." So that's exactly, you know, what my disciples was experiencing at that particular time. You know, it's like it had so much wealth, and then so Krishna's using that example, something we could directly relate with. Right? Just like a person who one time had wealth and lost it all, he can only just think about how am I going to get it back. You know? So he says that's for the prema bhaktis, the devotees who are situated in the platform of pure love. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives an interesting analysis. I'm skipping over a lot, but anyways, maybe some point in time I'll get back to it. I wanted to have more kirtan tonight too. And we're supposed to have Artik also. So, yeah, I saw the Arctic tray was there. I did. I thought maybe it might have been for the occasion.
No, we can go to
RT. I don't know. So anyways, just to complete this point, for the pure devotees, Krishna appears to not reciprocate, to intensify their attachment and love for them. So the gopis are, after they go through all these different classes, Krishna gives his explanation and answers how he's actually none of these. The gopis are asking, well, then what class do you belong to? And I do not respond to any living entity that respects or worships me. Now, wait a minute, what does this mean? Is all for naught? Don't get angry at Krishna, please. Not yet. We'll expand on this point. And the gopis will say, "But how is this different from the Guru Drohi you previously explained?" We didn't explain that, who Guru Drohi is. Guru Drohi is given to the person as an example of a person who just doesn't reciprocate, even though somebody is favorable towards him. Just, you know, even though the spiritual master has always been favorably disposed, helping the disciples, he was actually called the Guru Drohi. He gives two types of example. The Guru Drohi, he doesn't reciprocate with the guru, even though the guru is always favorably disposed towards him. And then it's called I think it's called Alpadrohi. Yeah, Alpadruha is a person who, which is a lower class of a Guru Druha, those who have a reason for being in Nibbaka called Alpadruha. No, wait a minute. Oh, yes. Those who show hatred toward one who renders protection are called Druha, and those who injure one who is faithful are called Guru Druha. Anyways, so these are... The gopis are saying, how is this different? You're saying you don't respond to anyone who acts favorably towards you. So how is this different from the Guru Drohi, the one that you previously explained? And Krishna says, for those surrendered souls who worship me through Nam Kirtan and other means, I do not respond in order to make their worship more perfect. O gopis, who cannot understand my real intention, not seeing me, those surrendered souls develop deep humility, feeling, alas, alas, everything I have done has been useless. Because I am an offender, Krishna has not shown even the slightest favor toward me. Let me be damned. By constantly thinking in this way, those who have not yet developed mature love for me will become free from lust and anger and awaken pure devotion full of power and brilliance. So Krishna is, in this commentary, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is explaining how Krishna says, I don't reciprocate with those who respect and worship me. So, but for those who are engaged in Nam Kirtan, chanting Hare Krishna, and it appears that Krishna is not reciprocating with them, then they think, oh, alas, alas. And they become humbled. And they begin to pray in a particular way, saying that Krishna has not even shown the slightest favor toward me. I'm an offender. He thinks that way. But he goes on, he continues. He never thinks, I'm an offender, Krishna's not reciprocating, why did Krishna not? Can't Krishna see I'm sincere? That's usually the way it develops. Mm-hmm. Krishna says, see, I'm sincere, that he should reciprocate, he should worship, but that's conditional love. That's the conditional lover. So, but if the devotee says, well, it's because of me. I have impurity. Let me be damned. I'll still go on chanting Krishna's name. If he goes on chanting Krishna's name in this mood, then Krishna says his heart will become free from whatever contamination is there in his heart. He'll become free from lust, free from anger, free from greed. He'll become pure devotee. So I'm reciprocating with him too. I'm actually bringing him to the platform of pure love, of devotion. So this is Krishna's way of reciprocating. We may object. Ultimately, when we read all of these verses and commentaries, we'll see that the gopis were ultimately defeated by Krishna. They realize that actually nobody has loved us like Krishna has loved us. And because Krishna actually made himself a debtor to the gopis, because he said, I cannot possibly repay you. What you've done, everything. He finally comes out and admits it, because what you've done, what you've sacrificed, all the sacrifices you've made to family, to society, to Vedic injunctions, to everyone else, I cannot properly reciprocate with what you've done. You've made me a debtor, and purposely Krishna left them to actually make himself a debtor to the gopis. And when the gopis realized that Krishna left them to make himself a debtor, an eternal debtor, he said, I can never repay you, even in the lifetime of Lord Brahma. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains how it was that Krishna couldn't repay them. We quoted that this morning in class. He said that you left your mother, your father, you left your children, you left your brothers, families. He said, And I've said in Bhagavad Gita that I reciprocate. And he said, as they surrender, I reciprocate accordingly. So he says that you've given up your family, but I can't give up my family. I can't give up my mother and my father, like you gave up your mother and father for me. I can't adequately reciprocate with you. I can't give up my brother. So how can I possibly adequately reciprocate with what you've done for me? There's nothing I can do to reciprocate in return. I can't give up my mother, my father, my brother. I'm a debtor. And when the gopis realized that Krishna did this, so to make himself a debtor to them, we've been defeated. We've been defeated. And actually, how the final jumping over again a lot. The gopis then considered in their minds, even though Krishna, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is full in all transcendental qualities, devoid of the slightest trace of any fault, and knows all about our love for him, in order to establish the superiority of our love for him and to make himself indebted to us, he has performed this act of giving us up. So there are two reasons. Right? Making himself indebted to us and to show everyone for all of eternity that nobody has more love for me than these gopis.
Oh, I see.
Actually, this is how Krishna repaid the debt to the gopis. Mm-hmm. Because previously, although Krishna, he couldn't repay the debt, but he put the gopis in that intense suffering to show everyone how their love is the highest. Mm-hmm. So how did he make it known to everyone and repay the debt for having put the gopis in that position? He came as Lord Chaitanya.
Oh, I see.
He came as Lord Chaitanya to pay back that debt to the gopis, to show everyone what the gopis' love is, by himself embodying the love of Srimati Radharani and showing everyone what that love is. So that's how he paid back the debt for having put the gopis in that kind of desperation. So there's two things: to establish the superiority of our love for him and to make himself indebted to us. He has performed this act of giving us up. We who wanted to defeat Krishna and criticize him for his conduct with our riddles have been most immoral in our intent, whereas he desired only to establish our exalted position. We could never act like that. Thus, in effect, we have become conquered by Krishna's love. Anyways, I skipped over a lot, but that's a little bit about Krishna's personality. And we explained already the reason why we talked on this subject. Some question?
Okay, the gopis gave so much up. And we're talking about unconditional love, but it seems like they're wanting something. It seems like they're giving so much, but wanting something back from Krishna as well. And that is the same amount of love that they're, that they feel they're giving towards him. It seems like they're wanting that same amount back. How does that see as unconditional?
They're actually, when the gopis are speaking to Krishna, they're actually giving, they're doing so with the intention of giving Krishna, who wants to experience all these types of experiences with lovers. They're doing it with the intention of giving him that experience that he wants to experience. Because why does Chandravali exist? It's to give, a competitor. It's because Krishna wants to experience all types of loving relationships. And whenever the gopis are speaking to Krishna in a particular way or provoking him in a particular way, or just like Satyabhama, there's right wing gopis, there's left wing gopis, or Satyabhama, she has a particular attitude towards of provoking Krishna and And she becomes jealous. She becomes very jealous, and she speaks in a jealous way. Radharani also becomes, shows jealous love. You know, how can jealousy exist? But huh? It's on the transcendental realm it exists. Because that gives Krishna pleasure. To experience all the varieties of experiences, but completely transcendental. So the gopis were never thinking of speaking this way in such a way because they were thinking they wanted something back. They wanted to give Krishna that pleasure. That's how they think. They never think of anything they want back. They wanted to give him the experience, that the pleasure of that experience. So it's never tinged with personal desire. Never. Even though it seems like it.
They're, you know, seeming to be very upset and angry that they're not getting back what they're giving.
Oh, yeah. And this Prabhupada says there's competition in the spiritual world. Yeah. There's different camps, different parties, different camps. And they're competing with one another. There are some who are more aligned with Krishna, some who are more aligned with Radharani. And you know, sometimes when we see camps in this world, we should understand it's a perverted reflection of... But it's still increased flavor. That's what rasa means. To taste all the unlimited varieties of tastes that there are. There's variety. So Krishna experiences that experience of being challenged by the gopis. But the gopis are doing it to give Krishna the pleasure of that experience.
It means they don't care about that pleasure.
They don't care about that pleasure. They don't.
They don't need anything.
They don't need it. They don't need it. So anything we see in this world, whether jealousy, envy, it's just a perverted reflection of the emotions that exist in relationship with Krishna and his devotees. So here it's tinged by some personal motivation. But amongst Krishna and his associates, there's never any personal motivation, even though it may appear to be. It's like when Krishna, and when the cowherd boys, you know, tell Krishna, "We're hungry, Krishna." It may sound like we're thinking of our own hunger. We want, you know, can you make an arrangement for us to fulfill our... But they know that Krishna gets so much pleasure from making arrangements to feed his friends. And that's why they asked him. But it looks to us, oh, why are the cowherd boys saying, Krishna, we're hungry, make arrangements for us to eat. But they were thinking, because Krishna gets so much pleasure
by
making arrangements to feed us. Okay.
In that sense, it means, you know, Krishna is more desirous to desperately the devotees than the devotees themselves to Krishna. That becomes like
Krishna's more what now?
Desire is more reciprocated with these devotees than the devotees themselves want to reciprocate.
Yes.
Is that implies that?
Yeah, but actually it's mentioned by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that there is an ever-increasing competition between Krishna and devotees. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, in I've oftentimes referred to this, it's in the chapter 9 in the story of Mother Jasoda. He says that, since I have the book right here, I might as well read it. Mother Jasoda binds Krishna. He says that Yasoda wanted to teach a lesson to her son. In her persistence, she would not give up her attempt to bind the Lord. In the competition between Krishna and his devotee, the devotee's determination always prevails.
Devotee's liberty is probably the same.
Krishna takes the defeat.
It's the same way here, also, gopis, he took the defeat from the gopis.
Yeah. And then the gopis took defeat. But then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in another place, he explains that there's always competition, and it's always going, it always continues. The gopis take defeat, and then Krishna takes defeat, and then the gopis take defeat, and then Krishna takes defeat, and then
you are increasing.
It's ever this way. It's ever increasing.
Bhagavad Bhakti Vidya Purnaswami mentioned that in that world also there's a pecking order, so you have to sort of assign who's in charge. Is that your consensus?
Who's in charge?
Yeah, Radharani's in charge, of course. So that has to be established.
Yes. Yes. And she makes Krishna. She controls Krishna. She makes Krishna dance. Therefore, she is known as Ishvari. Yes. All right, so let's have a kirtan. Yes, Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Thank you.